You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Wednesday, March 29th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, is the newness tightening around the money launderer in chief? And Republicans just sold your internet privacy for you. You will not be seeing a check. Will tax cuts be the next GOP Waterloo? And Trump rushes headlong into the climate apocalypse. Georgia, however, may bring some good news in the next 2 weeks. And ICE continues its assault as Jeff Sessions threatens sanctuary cities. And as we speak, two Bridgegate accomplices are about to take a big fall for Chris Christie. Two Christianist terror propagandists are charged in California with 14 felonies. And the North Carolina GOP will cost their state billions for their bigotry. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. No guest today. Michael is sick. You guys recorded two dope boys in here last night, is that right?
We did, yes.
And how much did Michael drink?
I wasn't monitoring.
I'm just curious because starting to see if there's a pattern.
Well, there's a pattern that alcohol is consumed when we consume dope boys.
I'm sorry.
There's a pattern. Dope boys?
There's a pattern of alcohol
being consumed when we record dope boys.
It just seems like whenever there's some type of function that involves drinking, the next day Michael has a mysterious medical problem.
Spooky.
Yeah, it's weird.
In his defense, which I say that a lot, but it's also a really long day. And Matt's like 5 years old, so he can handle it.
That's true.
Yeah, well, Michael's not that old. I went to the school meeting afterwards. My day. I was here. All right.
Did you complain about it? Like,
yeah,
later?
Of course
you're
I did.
Complain about
yes,
it on the show later?
Constantly.
Okay, great.
All right. I'm debating as to whether or not to start with the sort of speculatively, guilty pleasure on some level of the undoubtedly guilty but yet to be proven commander-in-chief. President of the United States, the launderer in chief, I think we're going to start to call him. Or go into this explanation as to why I think this next round of legislating by the Republicans is not going to work out terribly much better than their last. In fact, let's start there. But before we do, let's just start with this moment from Tuesday's House attempted vote. There is a law, I think I've mentioned this, from 1924 that had to do, I think it was Mellon at that time, right? Wasn't he the Treasury Secretary? Or was it Carnegie? I believe it was Mellon. And where the House has the ability to pass legislation, essentially, to view any particular individual's tax forms and to make them public. The Democrats have been attempting to bring this bill up. I think this is now the third or fourth time. This is going to be the Democrats' version of repealing Obamacare. The difference is, though, is that once they're in a position to pass it, they're actually going to pass it. it's not just pretend. And here is New Jersey Congressman Bill Pascrell speaking in favor of the resolution demanding President Trump's tax returns. Because much of what we're dealing with right now, I believe, and I think we've been saying this from very early on, I think is less about some type of Russian Manchurian candidate and more about some type of criminal enterprise. And here is Mr. Pascrell.
First look at it, and then we determine whether it should go public. What's wrong with that? That's our job. That's our responsibility. We cannot undermine our own responsibilities. We have a duty to do what has to be done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All time has expired. Does anyone else wish to strike the last word? Are there any amendments? If there are no amendments, I will now recognize Mr. Johnson for the purpose of offering a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee unfavorably report House Resolution 186 to the House of Representatives.
The question is on reporting House Resolution 186 unfavorably to the House. All those in favor of reporting the resolution unfavorably signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The motion is agreed to, and House Resolution 186 is ordered unfavorably reported to the House.
There you go. Now, you're probably asking yourself, wait, how is that possible? The ayes clearly did not sound as loud as the noes. The Republicans control the House. What you're seeing now in the august chamber of this committee hearing are basically an obstruction of justice. Basically, it's accomplices after the fact. And maybe, for all we know, ongoing. They're going to protect Donald Trump until it is not politically the right thing for them to do. So this country is going to go through a lot of grief and has already because of these Republicans in the House. I want to play that part back, that just the eyes, because that's a moment that's going to live for, I think, a long time. Just take it back to where the eyes were. Here we go.
To the House. All those in favor of reporting the resolution unfavorably signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The motion is agreed to, and House Resolution 186 is ordered.
There you go. That is the era we're living in right now. Alternative facts.
I wish it was like British Parliament, where then everybody starts screaming at each other.
Right, me too. All right, let's briefly touch on this. You've heard a lot about why the failure of the Republicans to repeal and replace Obamacare is going to hurt them in their attempts to pass tax reform. And the reason is this. The Republicans do not have a supermajority in the Senate. So the filibuster is still available to Democrats. In the House, Democrats can slow down bills by adding amendments to them, which ultimately get rejected, but it slows down the workings of the bill and can be very complicated because amendments could be put on there that make it very difficult for Republicans to vote against. There is a parliamentary maneuver called trying to pass something through reconciliation. But there are very specific rules about reconciliation. The benefits of reconciliation to the majority party is in the Senate, it is filibuster proof. You only need a 51 vote majority to pass it, which the Republicans have. In the House, a reconciliation bill cannot be amended. But there are some restrictions on the reconciliation bill. It must start in the House. Now, there's ways of getting around this. Sometimes the Senate will pass some rinky-dink tax bill that nobody really wants, and it comes to the House, and they rejigger it, and it goes back. But mostly it must start in the House. It must impact the federal budget. So you can't get rid of, let's say, the Obamacare regulations on the quality of your health insurance through this process, because to the extent that it impacts the budget, it's ancillary. It's not directly affecting the spending of the U.S. government. On top of this, and this is where they start getting into problems, a reconciliation bill cannot add to the deficit in year 11 and on of the U.S. Ledger, essentially. So the idea with passing health care first, or repeal of health care, was that it was going to provide a massive $800 billion tax cut, almost $1 trillion. It was $860 billion. $1 trillion tax cut, most of which would have gone to the top 1 or 2% of the population. And simultaneously, it would have cut nearly $1 trillion from the budget because you're getting rid of health care for a lot of people for a long time. And so the idea was that they were going to get that big tax cut, and then they would come in and do this next round of tax cuts, which would have added to the top 1 or 2%, but also could have been spread around. And they could find maybe $1 trillion worth of cuts. A little bit here, a little bit there. Maybe we'll add a border tax that will make up, and we'll get basically to net zero. And we can pass this thing through reconciliation. Well, they can't do that now, because they just lost $1 trillion worth of savings and $1 trillion worth of tax cuts. So the question is how are they going to cut more taxes? Well, it turns out that the border tax is not going over very well with folks like Walmart. And that impacts a lot of Republicans. And it also turns out that all the tax savings, the tax loopholes that they could reverse, they basically all go to people at the top. And so it's hard to find savings on the backs of people that the poor people that they would have, you know, if they had cut Medicare. Because the rich people's Medicaid, I should say, the rich people's Medicaid is something called the mortgage interest deduction. And nobody wants to get rid of that. I should say, nobody in the Republican coalition wants to get rid of that, because it necessarily goes to people who have a lot of money. Or I should say, people who have a lot of money necessarily want to keep that tax cut. The other problem that they have here is, of course, is the sunsetting. If they had repealed Obamacare, you were talking about a permanent tax cut that could last for decades and decades, because it would have been paid for by the fact that we're not providing health care for people. Now, the only tax cut they can pass is one that will expire in 10 years. And you'll recall, we went through this with Bush. There were tax cuts in 2001, late 2001, early 2002, I think it was, which expired in 2011. Does everybody remember the fiscal cliff? Well, in fact, it wasn't a fiscal cliff. It was just the idea that these tax cuts would expire, and the Republicans were upset about it. So when they do this again, because they're going to do it again, they're going to cut taxes for wealthy people for 10 years. 10 years later, folks, let's just keep in mind that we don't need to do anything and they expire. It won't be framed that way, just like it wasn't framed that way 6 years ago. It was framed like it was a crisis. But President Obama could have done nothing and would have won. Literally done nothing. Just said, I'm going golfing. I'll be in Hawaii. Sorry. It's Ramadan. Can't make it.
Not you, too.
I'm just saying that they would have said, well, oh, in that case. So this is going to be a real problem. And the corporate tax reform that they want, here's the dirty little secret. You know how we supposedly have the highest tax rates in the Western world? Well, you'll see when they can't pass a corporate tax reform bill that corporations, despite the fact that we have the highest tax rate in the Western world for corporations, the effective tax is somewhere down in the 75th or 60th percentile. And all of the tax loopholes that would be removed in the event that we drop the rate would impact negatively these corporations more than the supposed tax they're paying now. So my prediction is what we're ultimately going to see, and maybe we won't even see this. I mean, this is what Chuck Schumer and Paul Ryan and Hillary Clinton were hoping they would get, which would have been a tax repatriation of money that is kept offshore by corporations. Remember, during the Eisenhower administration, said to corporations, look, instead of having to pay taxes on money that you make overseas, we've just blown up the whole world fighting the Nazis, and we want to build up foreign markets. So here's the deal. I'm going to give you a moratorium. You will not have to pay taxes until you bring that money back to the U.S. That way you can keep the money over there and reinvest it and continue to build your businesses in foreign countries. Now, 40, 50, 60 years later now, 70 years later almost, it is as if this is a huge burden on U.S. corporations to have to pay these taxes when they come back in to the country. So in 2005, George Bush hailed the America Jobs Creation Act, which supposedly was going to create a bunch of jobs. People like HP were pushing this. So they said, one time only, you get to bring these taxes back at like 3%. Maybe it was 3.5% tax rate. The money came back. Shareholders got huge dividends. They were used for stock buybacks. So the board of directors and the CEOs got paid off. I think HP laid off 15,000 people that year, among other companies. You can Google it. And I have a feeling we're going to see something like that again. The only possible difference, the only way they'll get Democrats on board, I think, this was the plan before the election, was to earmark some of that money to infrastructure build out. So my guess will be it'll be something even worse than that. they'll be able to bring the money back and they'll get some type of sweetheart bond if they apply the money to a road they get to privatize. I mean, that, obviously it's not just going to be roads, but if the money is spent on some type of infrastructure. So they'll end up paying no taxes on this. It'll just basically be a huge giveaway. But the broad-based tax reform, long-term tax reform that they want to accomplish, I think is going to be very, very difficult for them to pull off at this point. But at one point, Donald Trump will realize, like, he needs a win because he can't just keep losing and losing and losing. And that's assuming he is still in office. Let's turn briefly to what's going on right now on the Hill. As you know, Devin Nunes now is getting calls for his resignation, or I should say recusal from chairing the House Intel Committee. And it's starting to get Sean Spicer very uptight. Can we actually say that? Or we just say that he's always been really super uptight. But what has been the Trump MO throughout not just his presidency, but the entire campaign? Well, the Trump MO for people like Sean Spicer and Donald Trump, and let's put this up, is to always make it racial. I don't know if you caught this, but like a week ago, when Donald Trump was having was giving a speech on his, he went to his first rally as a way of escaping this Russian stuff, and he started attacking Kaepernick. What? Yeah.
He said teams were afraid to pick him up because they didn't want to be tweeted at by the president, basically.
And I think the place was in Tennessee, right? I mean, there was, which is amazing because apparently there's no African Americans in Tennessee. Because the entire room was white, the entire stadium, and or you know whatever it was, Civic Center, and they loved it. They ate it up. That Kaepernick, who incidentally is rated better than I think like half a dozen quarterbacks who have been picked up off free agency.
He had good numbers last year.
Very good numbers. And here is Sean Spicer, freaking out about the fact that when Devin Nunes canceled yesterday's public intel committee hearing where we were going to hear from Sally Yates, and the Washington Post came out with a story saying that the White House was trying to stop Sally Yates from testifying, here's the way that Sean Spicer is going to deal with this.
2.5 months in, you've got this Yates story today. You've got other things going on. You've got Russia. You've got wiretap, and you've got...
No, we don't have that. You
investigations on Capitol Hill.
No, I get it, but you keep... I've said it from the day that I got here until whatever, that there is no connection. You've got Russia. If the president puts Russian salad dressing on his salad tonight, somehow that's a Russian connection. But every single person... I appreciate your agenda here, but the reality is... Oh, no, hold on. No, at some point, report the facts. The facts are that every single person who has been briefed on this subject has come away with the same conclusion. Republican, Democrat, so I'm sorry that disgusts you. You're shaking your head. I appreciate it, but understand this, that at some point, the facts are what they are. And every single person who has been briefed on this situation with respect to the situation with Russia, Republican, Democrat, Obama appointee, career, have all come to the same conclusion. At some point, April, you're going to have to take no for an answer with respect to whether or not there was collusion.
How do you change the perception
We're going to keep doing everything we're doing to make sure that what the president told the American people he was going to do to fulfill those pledges and promises that he made to bring back jobs, to grow the economy, to keep our
repeal
nation
and
safe,
Obamacare.
That's what he's been focused on since day one. We're going to keep focusing on that every single day.
So it goes on to talk about Condi Rice, and he tells her to stop shaking her head again. Should we continue there?
Yeah, let's hear this.
Did not support this president. She did not go to the convention. She comes. What is on the agenda, and how is their relationship? Has it healed since 2006 when he used a very negative word to describe.
So here's what I'll tell you. It's interesting that you ask those two questions back to back. On the one hand, you're saying, what are we doing to improve our image? And then here he is once again meeting somebody that hasn't been a big supporter of his. Hold on. April, hold on. It seems like you're hell-bent on trying to make sure that whatever image you want to tell about this White House stays. Because at the end of the day, let me answer. I understand. Okay, but you know what? You're asking me a question, and I'm going to answer it, which is the president. I'm sorry. Please stop shaking your head again. But at some point, the reality is that this president continues to reach out to individuals who've supported him, who didn't support him, Republicans, Democrats, to try to bring the country together and move forward on an agenda that's going to help every American.
You know, I'll tell you something. Even when, like, when I see parents saying that to a child, I'm like, what's wrong with you? Like, honestly, you stop moving your fat lips, buddy. Stop sweating. They're getting a little frustrated in the White House, and maybe they're getting a little bit scared.
And for some reason, Spice has been very sensitive to April Ryan's question since he's been taking questions
from
her.
How dare she? Isn't she also the reporter who was told by Omarosa that we have a file on you?
Yes, and I think physically assaulted. Minor physical assault, such as like a push or something, Omarosa.
That's the Lewandowski thing. Learn that from the best.
How much would you bet that in the White House they're like, someone's going to talk to April Ryan? Would you get Omarosa in here, please? She'll know how to talk to her. Unbelievable.
Good for April Ryan, though, because she is going hard. At you know every turn, so
this is actually good for her. It's like look at she's sort of like getting attention for doing her job.
Her his Helen Thomas, in some ways. Who we also interviewed on the old Majority Report in terms of archives. See if you can dig that up. That was the best of recently
in the past year, I think.
Oh, all right, Kelly. All right, so let's go through what's going on in this. We're starting to see more and more stories that are retelling the past questions about Donald Trump and his seemingly close physical and business ties in terms of close proximity to a lot of money laundering. It's weird. We know that Devin Nunes is preventing Sally Yates from testifying. I have a feeling that is a subsidiary issue that they have that is more political than anything else. I don't know that Sally Yates would necessarily have the knowledge, incriminating knowledge, of actions that the Trump administration took before coming into office. But here is Devin Nunes, who is now getting calls both from Republicans and Democrats alike. There's now, I think, at least two or three Republicans who have said he's got to step down and recuse himself. And he really seems to be having problems dealing with that question. Here he is. The Chiron is House Intel Chair won't step aside from Russia probe. Even though now we have a completely inoperative House Intelligence Committee. Like on Monday, supposedly, they supposedly come in and they get a report on all the hotspots from the intelligence agencies. That meeting was canceled. Devin Nunes just seems to be walking around, as far as I can tell from what is on TV, he's just walking around the Capitol, never staying in one place. Because I think he... we have like hours of footage of him just walking around.
There's two other
like,
clips we could have used.
With reporters just following him. Where's he going? Where's he going? Here's the question.
White House and House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes.
But are you going to recuse yourself?
Why are you delaying?
Who would not tell CNN's Manu Raju whether he plans to recuse himself in the Russia investigation?
Why are you so lame? You know when they get to that point, they're starting to lose their composure a little bit.
I need to find that in, like, the Goebbels playbook or something like that, the propaganda, like, just go to lameness or something like that.
Well, but isn't that the same dynamic that we just saw with Sean Spicer? Don't you nod your head at me. Don't shake your head, April Ryan. I mean, this is the way they're responding.
I think it's not quite the same dynamic.
I don't know about that. I don't know. So here is a story that came out in the USA Today last night. Trump's business network reached alleged Russian mobsters. Now, we know that Felix Sater, who by all accounts heavily Russian mobbed up, I think we have this by court accounts. I mean, he has been charged with multiple crimes at different times. He clearly seems to be an FBI asset. Loretta Lynch wrote a letter in his defense saying that he's been very helpful. He was, 2011, 2012, I think maybe as late as 2013, a special advisor to Donald Trump. And I'm not saying he was a special advisor. I'm saying that was his title. So this is how the USA Today breaks down the connections, if you will, with Donald Trump and money laundering. A member of the firm that developed the Trump Soho Hotel in New York is a twice convicted felon who spent a year in prison for stabbing a man and later scouted for Trump investments in Russia. That's Felix Sater. An investor in the Soho project was accused by Belgian authorities in 2011 in a $55 million money laundering scheme. Three owners of Trump condos in Florida and Manhattan were accused in federal indictments of belonging to a Russian-American organized crime group and working for a major international crime boss based in Russia. Former mayor from Kazakhstan was accused in a federal lawsuit filed in Los Angeles in 2014 of hiding millions of dollars looted from his city, some of which was spent on three Trump Soho units. A Ukrainian owner of two Trump condos in Florida was indicted in a money laundering scheme involving a former prime minister of Ukraine. This is a funny clip from this USA Today. In 2013, you remember, Donald Trump said, I've never done business, right? I have no dealings with Russia. I have no deals that could happen in Russia. We've stayed away. I have no loans in Russia. I have no loans in Russia at all. He doesn't even remember the last time he had dealings with Russia. In 2013, after Trump addressed the potential investors in Moscow, he bragged to Real Estate Weekly about his access to Russia's rich and powerful. I have a great relationship with many Russians, and almost all of the oligarchs were in the room. So digging into Sater, his criminal past was not well known until publicly divulged in 2007. As he sought investment opportunities in Russia, he carried business cards identifying him as a senior advisor to the Trump Organization that included the company's email and phone number. In February of this year, Sater introduced a Ukrainian politician pushing a pro-Russian peace proposal to Michael Cohen, Trump's personal lawyer and former chief counsel at the Trump Organization. Sater is no longer responding to emails or calls, and his website went dark last week, displaying the message, maintenance mode is on. I bet. Money laundering was an issue for Trump's Taj Mahal casino in Atlantic City. Huh. So you've got casinos. I mean, maybe second to like vending machines in terms of money laundering, historically. And real estate, where people regularly overpay for his properties. Huh. It's weird. The Taj Mahal Casino in Atlantic City was fined $10 million in 2015 for failing to report suspicious transactions. Those federal rules are designed to protect the U.S. financial system from being used as a safe haven for dirty money and transnational crimes. Jennifer Calvary, then director of the U.S. Treasury's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN, said at the time it was the largest penalty the agency ever levied against a casino since reporting requirements started in 2003. So we have all this money laundering that's just sort of like seems to be going around in the orbit of Donald Trump. And I think, you know, we're back to the very real possibility that all of these people associated with Trump, working for Trump, were dealing in their minds just with criminals. Criminals who could break into databases, who could were well practiced at phishing emails, stealing credit cards. And my guess is they weren't, in their minds, colluding with the Russian government. They were just colluding with Russian criminals. Paul Manafort was associated with at least 15 bank accounts and 10 companies in Cyprus, dating back to 2007. At least one of those companies was used to receive millions of dollars from a billionaire Putin ally, according to court documents. Banking sources said some transactions on Manafort-associated accounts raised sufficient concern. Because you always want to have multiple accounts. Raised sufficient concern to trigger an internal investigation at a Cypriot bank into potential money laundering activities. That's weird. And after questions were raised, Manafort, of course, cooperated with the investigation. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. Closed the accounts. I read that wrong. Because why wouldn't you close those accounts? They weren't that important anyways, all 15 of them. Maybe he was just pissed, and he was like, I'm going to a credit union. I am done supporting this bank. Meanwhile, getting back to Nunes, there is now a push for a possible ethics committee investigation of David Nunes.
Devin. Still have
Devin.
Those?
Devin. Yeah, exactly. Well, this is funny because the ethics committee was basically in the last months of the Obama administration completely defanged. You recall they passed some rule where they basically went into an agreement. We're not going to bring anything. But there is a, I don't want to say arcane, but there is, I guess, buried in the rules regarding the House Intelligence Committee. There is a section that triggers a mandatory investigation into an allegation of spilling classified information. And it appears that Devin Nunes may have revealed the existence of the FISA warrant by saying that it wasn't the case that Trump was being surveilled, but that he was incidentally surveilled on a legal FISA warrant. So that may be in Devin Nunes' future. So all of this is, and we should also say one more aspect about the Sally Yates thing. There's a story about Mike Pence being being a real solid rock for Donald Trump in the White House. And the story basically says, yeah, Pence wasn't mad about Flynn lying to him at all. Kept at arm's length about all of it. But Trump wanted to get rid of him, and Pence was just an excuse, and Pence willingly went along with it. He didn't mind. Now, I don't know if that's the part they don't want Sally Yates to testify about. But apparently, according to Marcy Wheeler, there was a phone call with Michael Flynn, Donald Trump, and Vladimir Putin that lasted for an hour after the time that Sally Yates had told Donald Trump that Flynn lied to Pence. And Marcy Wheeler makes the point that if the attorneys from the White House who are claiming attorney-client privilege of Sally Yates, then it is an implicit confirmation that Trump hid Sally Yates' warning from Mike Pence. And the reason is this, is because Sally Yates' attorney argues there is no client privilege because everything that supposedly went down has already been made public by the president. So unless the president is lying and had a different relationship with Yates and that information than he's claimed, then there's no grounds in which to say that any information needs to be kept confidential. So it's sort of a catch-22 for the Trump people. But Yates was intending to testify and was not going to elect to refuse to testify based on any type of executive privilege. So that's why you heard that meeting canceled. But I just don't understand how they think they're going to be able to do this for, I mean, how long do they think they're going to be able to do this? Does anybody have any suggestions on that? They're just going to keep playing the clock out?
Just keep walking around Capitol Hill.
I don't understand how they thought they could get away with doing any of this.
They weren't expecting to have to.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
Let's just play one more clip. This is a really, I found this pretty moving. I mean, just because of the nature of this guy. He's 87 years old. It was an immigration forum in Sacramento, California on Tuesday. As you know, California has been battling ICE. And we've just had Jeff Sessions come out with threatening sanctuary cities. And the first guy you're going to hear from at this hearing is a representative from ICE. I'm sorry, he's a Sacramento sheriff who is cooperating with ICE. And he's claiming it's because of safety issues. And understand, most police will tell you that it actually endangers the public's safety because they need people to report crimes that they see. And if you are undocumented, you may be afraid to do that. In fact, we haven't seen hard data on this yet, but we've seen, at the very least, a downturn in reporting of sexual offenses in Los Angeles from Latino communities. We have seen legal families not take advantage of government services for fear of being on any type of registry. So here's the sheriff trying to justify his working with ICE, and the community wants nothing of it. And here's this 87-year-old man, and I think you'll hear the point that he's trying to make.
I am looking at this only through a public safety lens. That's how I make all my decisions. So it has nothing to do with Trump or the laws are on the books. It's how do I go to sleep at night, keeping 1.5 million people safe.
Sir, go ahead, please. Step up. Sheriff
Jones? Yes, sir.
Thank you for the forum that you have here tonight. When I was a little boy in Poland, for no other reason But for being Jewish, I was hauled off by the Nazis. And for no other reason, I was picked up and separated from my family, who was exterminated in Auschwitz. And I am a survivor of Auschwitz and Dachau. I spent 5.5 years in concentration camp.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that one.
I spent 5.5 years in concentration camp for one reason and one reason only. Because we picked on people. And you as the sheriff, who we elected as sheriff of this county, we did not elect you the sheriff of Washington, D.C. It's about time you serve you the people here. And when this gentleman stands up there and he says he doesn't go after any people, he should read today's B. Because of today's B, the Supreme Court Justice of State of California objected to ICE coming in and taking people away from the courts. Don't tell me that this is a lie. You stand up here, Mr. Jones, don't forget. History is not on your side.
It's pretty powerful, I think, to be told by a 87-year-old Holocaust survivor that you're on the wrong side of history when you're starting to go around checking people's papers. And, yeah, the sheriff's sitting up there with the ICE director. Something super creepy when they all wear their pins, but that's how they identify them with each other.
What was the date of that?
That was last night.
It was last night? Because he's talking about the Sacramento Bee. It was probably like an editorial against ICE going to courthouses, and I thought that they had stopped.
It was the Supreme
that.
Court making that ruling. The California Supreme Court.
Oh, so he's just talking about the Bee reporting on that.
Yes.
Got it.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, it is your support that makes this program possible. Become a member today at Majority. What is it? Join the Majority Report? I don't know. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Oh, you know what? Hold off on that. We're going to have a special offer in 2 days, starting the month of April.
Is there a similar offer last year?
Mm-hmm. Way to blow the surprise, man.
People might have long memories. If they don't, then they're still going to be surprised.
What if they go back? They could go back.
If they want to put that much effort into it, I think we should.
That's probably true. Kelly has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I'll be surprised.
Also, if you buy your crap from Amazon or Jet, do it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Go there, click on the Amazon or Jet link, bookmark it, buy your crap through there. We get a kickback. You will notice no difference, but like I say, we will. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. Quick break. Be right back. Fun half.